Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
This episode sponsored by We Feed Raw. This 4th of July, while you're grilling real food, why is your dog still eating processed filler? We Feed Raw makes it easy to upgrade your dog's bowl with complete, balanced, raw meals made from high-quality meat and nutrient-rich organs, with no fillers and no artificial preservatives. It arrives frozen, ready to serve, and made to help your dog thrive from nose to tail. New customers can save $100. That's $50 off your first two boxes when you start a new meal plan subscription by July 7th. We Feed Raw makes feeding real raw meals easy with personalized plans delivered right to your door. Visit wefeedraw.com. That's WEFEEDRAW.com. We Feed Raw gives your best friend real food they'll love.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is Hidden Killers half year in review. A look back at some of the most compelling cases of 2026 so far. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
First degree murder with special circumstances. Lying in wait. Financial gain, killing a witness, lewd acts with a person under the age of 14, mutilation of the remains. Those are the charges that have now been filed against David Anthony Burke, the artist known as David, D4VD, in the death of 14-year-old Celeste Rivas Hernandez. It's finally come down. Prosecutors say Celeste walked into his Hollywood Hills home on April 23rd of last year and was never heard from again. Her dismembered body was found 5 months later in the trunk of his Tesla. The DA says the death penalty is on the table. And that's where we drop. That's where we begin today, Tuesdays with Bob, here on the podcast. Tuesday. Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agency for the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, of course, with us. And Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. Go check it out wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. Let's start there, Bob. Prosecutors didn't just charge first-degree murder. They stacked special circumstances on top of it. It's like an infomercial. But wait, there's more. Lying in wait, murder for financial gain, killing of a witness. In California, that's death penalty eligible material. When the DA loads a case like that on day one, is that about what they can actually prove? Or is it about going in crazily strong with a lot of leverage and controlling the narrative?
I think it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
I really do. In this case, I think it probably leans towards the proof. I mean, it took them a long time to arrest him.
Yes.
I mean, months and months. We're all like, what the hell is going on? Like, they found her in his car. Like, what? Like, where's the arrest? And then it finally happens. You know, but I could tell you, DAs in LA do not file death eligible cases on a whim. You know what I mean? Like, they're not coming in with weak evidence. So, by all accounts, it appears that they've built a pretty strong case, you know, because each one of those allegations has to be proven independently of one another, obviously. So it's interesting, man, you know, and it's like I never heard of the guy. Like, I didn't listen to his music. I wasn't aware of him until this case broke. So I didn't kind of understand the significance of it. But, you know, when you started to hear kind of the factual background that she was missing for so long, I just raised so many questions in my mind. Like, where was the family? You know, not that I'm putting anything on the family, but my 14-year-old's gone for months.
I got questions there too. I mean, I'm not giving the family a free pass on any of this shit because I'm sorry. We both have children of that same age, and I can't conceive of ever being, oh yeah, she went out with her 19-year-old boyfriend who's a music artist, and she didn't come back. Like, it's just another day in paradise.
And we've seen a lot of parental failings across all the cases we've been covering lately. Complete failures
everywhere. And I'm not saying that they, I mean, they're mourning. I get it. But I'm sorry. it's not a free pass because your daughter is dead that you didn't fail her as well, because you did. Yeah. That's what it is. I'm sorry you failed your daughter. I'm sure you feel horrible about it too. Maybe this should be a lesson learned for other folks who are currently failing their children. You know, this is how it could end.
It could be one of those cases where, you know, I hate to say it, but survivor's guilt might be very earned.
Yeah.
No doubt. No doubt.
I don't wish it on them whatsoever, but I'm sorry. I'm not just going to pretend. Right. Oh, justice will be. Yeah. Well, you know what? Maybe if there was a little better parenting to begin with, we wouldn't be in this position to begin with.
Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, but I mean, ultimately, the way that I think this thing will play out, if in fact it goes to trial, which, you know, if you're listening to what his attorney is saying, it sounds like it's going to.
Yeah.
But, you know, attorneys always start that game early on in the game. You know, oh, my client's innocent. We're going to fight to the. Mm-hmm. You know, so like things change as discovery starts to come in and you start to look at it and you're like, wow, you're screwed here, man. Like they've got some pretty powerful shit.
And I want to kind of begin asking you, because it's something that came to my mind, and I'm being very cautious as we begin this, because you've taught me to be learning from you over the years here on these cases. You know, obviously, the spotlight's on the DA right now. It's their time to shine. It's their time to say their big piece and make it look like this is cut and dry and it is what it is. Obviously, the defense is their turn to do it, too. We're going to go to trial probably at some point. Is there anything to be said of the strength of this case with the fact that the way that he has been arrested and has been charged? It wasn't through a grand jury indictment. It was him being arrested under what is it, probable cause, basically, or something of that nature. And then eventually the DA comes back within 48 hours and makes the charges. Anything to be said there?
I don't think so. I think that it was probably really done that way in order to kind of shine a light on it, you know, because we all became aware of it when the, you know, when the arrest took place. You know, I was tweeting about it. It was strange to me the way that it was done, because, you know, it's different, like in different jurisdictions, but there's a pretty bright line rule in terms of your ability to keep somebody detained in custody for beyond 48 hours without it slipping into the realm of being unconstitutional if you don't charge them, or at least go in and get some probable cause and get it on paper. And it was sounding like that they hadn't done that, because I saw some maybe misreporting that he had been charged by complaint, which I think turned out not to be true. And we knew that he wasn't indicted. So, but I think ultimately they wanted it to play out over the weekend. I think even though, you know, I think there was the aspect of them being, you know, hoping that they'd be able to take a run at him in terms of being able to get him to talk, even though he knew he was repped, you know, and I'm sure his lawyer went in immediately and said, my guy's not talking to you. So, go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, given the way that the floodgates look like they opened, you know, with all this information, with all these charges that I wasn't really expecting all at once, does it look like they got a flip on this?
I mean, kind of. Like, they had to have had something like substantial to get it to the point where they're at right now, right? Mm-hmm. And to go back to Tony's question, I think the biggest thing that we can take away from the amount of charges that were levied against him, they've been building the case. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that this is a situation where the left hand didn't necessarily know what the right hand was doing, that being law enforcement in the DA's office. I think they were in communication pretty heavily, because they're not coming up with these types of charges over a weekend. You know, I mean, there's a lot of thought, and I think we're going to probably get into some of the specific charges, because there's some novel theories here in the way that they're applying some of these charges.
Yeah.
You know, so there was clearly a lot of thought that was put into it. I think that they were playing it a certain way to the press in order to kind of get the lights on it. And, you know, it was going to be the big day when they came out and issued the presser in terms of what they were charging him with.
Yeah, so smart moves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about the financial gain allegation, because that's specific. And it kind of takes us out of the realm here of, you know, was it a horrible accident of some sort? And then this is just a cover up by people who are young and dumb and don't know what the hell they're doing. And, you know, it ended up being, you know, the cover up ended up being far worse than the actual crime. The allegation here of financial gain, the DA said David allegedly killed Celeste to protect his music career because she was, quote, threatening it that night. That means prosecutors believe they can prove motive here, that a 14-year-old girl was killed because she was a liability to someone's brand, essentially, you know, insinuating that if it came out that sees an adult is having a relationship with a 14-year-old, that could destroy your career pretty damn quick. And the quickest way to protect that is getting rid of the threat, which is her. That's pretty specific to go in with that sort of a claim. One would assume they must have some sort of evidence to prove that sort of a motive. I'm guessing some sort of digital footprint, some sort of text, email. I mean, that's just my speculation. What do you think that they have to be able to levy that sort of a charge that's specific against David?
It is a very aggressive application of the financial gain aspect of mm-hmm. it. You know, it really is, because traditionally what you're talking about, like you saw it in Corey Richens, you're talking about like insurance proceeds, like, or they were trying to get to a will. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's where it's kind of a motive thing, but there's actually a financial gain at the end of, you know, at the end of the crime for the person. So it was one of the reasons why they committed the crime. And here, like you said, man, it's like this concept of protecting a career really stretches that doctrine like quite a bit. And the defense is going to attack it on the legal grounds before it ever makes it to a jury. I mean, that's going to be one of the counts that's going to be very highly litigated, you know, but I think that we're seeing it more and more from prosecutors across the country in terms of them having a willingness to stretch kind of the boundaries of what have traditionally been established in terms of certain statutes. I mean, we mm-hmm. saw it with the Colin Gray case and the Crumbleys, where, you know, they kind of stretched these statutes to include people that wouldn't have otherwise have been prosecuted under that same statute ever prior to. So mm-hmm. I think that that's starting to embolden prosecutors across the country to say, all right, well, we think we can make it fit. You know, ultimately, if the charge survives pretrial motions, it's going to be up to the jury to decide whether or not, well, I think it's a bridge too far, or, you know, you're right. Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying here. I think it does fit. So it's going to be really a pretty interesting aspect of the case in terms of kind of law, like a law nerd perspective. You know, but they're going to have digital evidence, you know, yeah. I mean, in order to prove it, they're going to have, because obviously, sadly, Celeste isn't here.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're not going to have the ability to be able to put her on the stand and say, yeah, you know, I threatened him with this the night of. So hopefully they have some kind of digital footprint, you know, that says whether it's DMs, texts,
yeah.
you know, where they're going at it. But, you know, the problem is she was typically with him, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not to say, look, I mean, my wife and I text from within the same house. If I'm upstairs, she's downstairs.
Sure.
You know, but I mean, the reality is we're usually screaming through the house because we're very loud people. But, you know, normal people, I think, you know, might hit each other up from it. So, I mean, there's a chance that it exists there. And again, I don't think they're bringing the charge if they don't have the ability to be able to prove it up in their minds. You know yeah. what I'm saying? So I anticipate that we're going to be able to see something that's kind of like saying, all right, look, this is the evidence that we have. And we'll see that when it's litigated pre-trial. I mean, they're going to have to put some kind of offer of proof up in order to show that, look, this statute applies here, and this is why, and this is the evidence that we have to support it. So,
yeah, it's interesting with this financial aspect, because, I mean, I dug into it a couple of days ago, and I literally just did the research on it again now. He's not any, you know, from what is open source and what you can garner, I mean, his net worth is a couple million. Granted, it's not chump change, but at the same time, it's around the realm of successful podcasters. I mean, this is not like someone who is huge. I mean, successful,
yeah.
but he's a TikTok success, you know. So it's interesting that they place so much value on him and his and this net worth and financial side, when it's not a lot there. I mean it's there, but I don't know. I still think it's, when you got a lot of 15-year-olds and teenagers and 20-year-olds doing stupid shit, you know, I think their digital footprint is going to give them up, because whether you have the David and Celeste text going back and forth is one thing, but I think everyone else in that circle, how do you shut them up? I mean, I don't think they're going to be shut up. I think that's why there's so many charges.
It's going to be really, really difficult. I mean, somebody in the inner circle had to have flipped. And I agree.
A lot of people in the inner circle.
Yeah. I mean,
fear and a 20-year-old go hand in hand, generally.
Oh, yeah. And that's an easy flip there, too. Yeah. It's either you want to go down with them or you want to talk.
Because right, in other words, you know, I mean, it's apples and oranges comparing this to like the Diddy case or anything related to it. But that's the kind of thing we're talking about here. I mean, this is we'll call an up and comer that is low end, moderately successful music wise. See, like you hadn't heard of him. I hadn't heard of him. I mean, some people have heard of him, which is great, but he wasn't mainstream making.
He's brand new. I mean, he had just performed at Coachella. He had his debut album coming out. There was a lot of potential.
Potential, right? And, right. And potential energy, right there. It's what it
that's
is.
That's where it runs. You know, like, yeah. Both ways, really.
Do you litigate potential?
Well, like it's bigger than that because I mean, the argument really would be from the DA's perspective. Look, I hear what you're saying. He doesn't have Diddy money. And that brand, but that brand's established. It's right. Like, look at the Kanye West shit. Like the guy had lost his mind when he said, I'm all better. I'm taking my meds. You know, people, his brand was alive and well again. I think it's a stronger argument, frankly, when you are an up and comer that there's a lot more incentive for you to go to great lengths, even psychotic lengths to protect that building brand because it's your way out. You know what I'm saying? As opposed to have already made it. So it's an interesting thing. I think it's the weakest of all the charges. But again, as a law nerd, I'm anxious to see him try to apply.
Yeah. And again, I still, because of the up and coming of it, means he doesn't have, and my reference really to the Diddy or even Kanye is the tightness of the circle, which they have reps of protection of their own breadwinner, because really without the main breadwinner at the center core, they're pretty much nothing. And him being an up and comer, that tightness of that core group, I can't imagine is tight enough that you wouldn't have everyone spilling their guts when threatened with, hey, you can get a few scraps today or you can go away from jail for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
I want to talk about another charge. Prosecutors have also charged continuous S acts and lewd acts with an individual under 14. And one of the special circumstances, then killing a witness is tied directly to Celeste being a witness to those acts and also being the victim. So the prosecution's theory is that the S relationship with her created the motive to end her life, essentially. They're saying, and the defense for David hasn't addressed any of those specifically, but they have addressed the ending her life part, that he is not responsible. They've said in certain words, he's not responsible for the end of her life. Continuous S acts. That's an interesting phrasing, and you can probably expand upon that, Bob, a bit. But continuous S acts, they're going to have some sort of evidence to prove that that is what's going on. I'm wondering if it's digital. And number two, could this be a case where David ends up, maybe they can show that he wasn't responsible for her actual death, but he could walk away a registered S offender for the rest of his life for having done these sort of things continuously, according to the prosecution, with someone under the age of 14.
Yeah. And I mean, it's classic prosecutorial architecture, really. Yeah. And they did it in a really kind of elegantly cold way, you know, because the S crimes do two things at once. They really establish the motive for the murder. And then they also bootstrap, you know, the killings of, you know, the killing a witness special, you know, because like that's the other part of it. Because that's, you know, when I say special, it's those that word is what's making it potentially a death penalty case. So, and when I'm talking about bootstrapping, it's basically where they're saying, okay, I'm gonna put this saddle on this other really strong charge in order to get to the second charge.
Yeah.
You know, that's the concept of bootstrapping, and prosecutors do it all the time, and it's a very effective way to get convictions on those charges. You know, the fact of the matter is that she was the only living witness to a felony that would have ended his career, his freedom, and everything that comes along with it. So what's going to be interesting is kind of the cross admissibility. You know, because in a S crime prosecution in LA or in California, you know, you can introduce the kind of the SO evidence. Mm-hmm. So even if it's an uncharged conduct, meaning that they can show patterns, prior victims, grooming behavior, they can put all that stuff in. And then that makes the underlying S case way harder to defend in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. And it makes the murder case much harder to peel apart in terms of that bootstrapping concept from the predicate offenses. So predicate is kind of like a charge that you have to, you know, something that you had to have done in order to have committed this other thing. You know, like the best way to kind of explain predicate offenses is in terms of like the meth trade. So when they started making Sudafed, you know, they made that as a predicate offense to cooking meth, because as they started to develop these cases, they started to learn that that was one of the primary ingredients, that these guys would go out to different pharmacies, buy up tons of Sudafed, and then use that to cook up the Sudafed. So when they started realizing, all right, well, this is the way to nail them on it, we're going to start making people have to give their IDs if you're going to want to go in and get like Sudafed. You know, so what you do, like if you go into a pharmacy, at least in our state and most states, you got to give your ID, and that's so you're on their radar, and then they'll know. And that's really a precursor predicate of cooking meth. So think of it that way in terms of how they're trying to kind of layer that particular charge in to bootstrap it to the murder charge. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love to get them. Those are the charges against David. Weigh in. The links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
David Anthony Burke is facing the most serious charges the Los Angeles County DA's office can bring. That David, D4VD. First degree murder, special circumstances, a possible death sentence. His defense team says he didn't cause Celeste's death, and that they've said it in language that sounds like they already know what the evidence actually shows, which is interesting. We do not. Fighting the charges is heavy in a case this public with a 14-year-old victim. It's a different kind of war that they're walking into. Blair Burke's statement, which is David's attorney, saying he's innocent in a vague sense, but he did not cause her death. That's the specifics of what the verbiage is. If the defense already knows the cause of death from sealed autopsy findings, which they probably do, then they're confident that it helps them. Bob Mata, defense attorney, is with us to help break all this down. Bob, what kind of alternative explanation could that language be setting up there, that he did not cause her death? Not he's innocent, he did not cause her death from a defense standpoint.
I mean, it's very carefully worded, right? So I think when they're saying he didn't cause her death, they're saying it wasn't by his hand specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he was the one who was he was the architect of the murder, though. So meaning that somebody else did the dirty work. But much like in any case where if you hire a hitman, you didn't actually cause the death per se, is ends up being the person who committed the crime and actually killed the person. But you're just as responsible under the eyes of the law as the person who pulled the trigger or used the knife, whatever the mode of the murder was. So it's interesting, you know. And the other part of it is kind of the premeditation aspect of it. And, you know, like lay people, a lot of times I think confuse what premeditation might mean, thinking that you really have to be planning this thing out for an extended period of time. You know, that's just not the case with the law. I mean, it has been well established that premeditation can form in seconds.
Yeah. So essentially, if it went down kind of the way we're reading the tea leaves or the way it's being described, that she went into the house on the 23rd, I believe, and then never came back out, that she's dead because she was a threat to his image and his career, because the tea may spill to everybody about the relationship that was going on. That in itself, having all of those pieces built together, does that add up to you? Does that make sense that all this could truly be what took place here in this situation between the two of them that night? That in the conversation, she said something to the effect of, well, I'll expose you. I'm just throwing randoms out here. And then he made a quick calculation, and that was premeditation. That calculation of, well, if she's going to do that, I should get rid of her. That would be premeditation, wouldn't it?
Oh, 100%. Well, yeah. And look at it this way. I mean, we don't know kind of the course of how this played out.
Yeah.
You know, this played out over months.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, she was gone for a long time. And frankly, lying in wait in and of itself is a form of premeditation.
Yeah.
If the prosecutors can show that David invited Celeste into his home knowing what was going to happen at the end of the day, that's premeditation. You know what I mean? Because, like, if he invited her in initially, you know, without her, like, maybe there was some kind of threat of an outcry, like, earlier on. And he's like, oh, shit. He's like, I got to handle this. And he invites her into the house knowing, like, I can't, like, invite her into my house and then, like, the next day she's dead, because that seems pretty sus. You know, so he's like, instead, I'm gonna bring her into the fold. I'm going to have her stay with me. And then, you know, one day she's going to show up dead somewhere else. Like, in his mind,
does she ever even need to have made a threat of, I'm going to expose you? I mean, it would be pretty common knowledge to David that if word got out that he was doing inappropriate things with a child, that would probably end his career. It doesn't necessarily need a message from the victim going, hey, by the way, this might destroy you. If he just he knows this, anyone would know this, that could be the cause and effect of this sort of scenario, of this situation, that he's allegedly having this relationship with this girl. She doesn't have to say boo. Could it just be at some moment in time he weighs the risk and goes, my album's about to come out, I got a world tour that's coming up, the last thing I want is for this kind of information to drop. And he just makes the decision one day of, like, she's too much of a liability, she loves him, everything's great, maybe there's, like, nothing that she says that she's gonna expose him, but he just knows damn well people will figure out what's going on and that will destroy him. Just him connecting those dots, is that enough to describe those charges?
Yeah, I think ultimately it is. It's not optimal. I mean, you'd rather have it the other way because it's more compelling. You know, but this kind of, like, dovetails back into what Robin was talking about with, like, you know, your Diddy or Kanye, where they have huge money, you know, because, like, those guys typically handle these types of issues with money. You know, they pay people off to keep quiet, you know, and then they continue to pay them off to keep them quiet. This, as we've discussed, I don't think was really an option for him because he didn't have that kind of money. So ultimately, though, at the end of the day, I don't think that they need any kind of actual proof of an outcry because they can make the argument, you know, exactly the argument that I just made. Him paying her off wasn't the option. The only option he really had was to get rid of her.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be an interesting challenge for the prosecution on this, and I'm going to try to channel a little bit of my inner Bob now on defense side, and that is, you know, there's no reps of really crazy behavior. And granted, I know music industry and everything, but I mean, when I try to do all the research on everyone in this circle, to go from it, to my optic, they're going from 0 to 100 on healthy interactions, healthy-ish, you know, with this up-and-coming star, to murder, death. I think, you know, I'm just put myself in, you know, projecting forward. If they don't plead out and it's on a jury and they're trying to show premeditation and the prosecution's saying, I mean, they got to overcome for a jury beyond reasonable doubt with everyone that everyone that was involved in this in a circle had a clean record. There's been no prior charges, no history of violence recorded, as we know yet, at least as I know from my research, to all of a sudden they want to murder her to protect the image.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a stretch unless there's more in there that they can throw in there, like with text messages and things like that, because from the optic I see right now, it still looks like an accidental, stupid 20-year-old dumb shit going on and them trying to cover it up, because it's hard behaviorally for me to see why they would take that action. And they thought it was in their best interest when a lot of people knew she was going to this house, seeing him, and that they thought it was a great idea. Granted, prefrontal lobe is not fully formed yet, but someone along that path said it's a great idea to kill her.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're putting logic into it.
I said, that's why you never know.
Which I appreciate, man. But I mean, you make a great point at the same time. But you know, a lot of times in these situations, and like you said, we're not talking about a fully developed prefrontal cortex yet. And, you know, you're dealing with like a bunch of guys that are in the same boat. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where they're not sitting there as like kind of a, you know, mastermind think tank in terms of how to handle this situation. They're a bunch of kids, for, you know, lack of a better.
Which I think makes a great point too, Bob, is that because I don't think any one individual would be capable of this, it would actually have to be a group mentality of collective stupid that yep. said this was a great idea. And so I think it's hard to imagine just one charge. I mean, not one charge, multiple charges. It's one person being guilty of being involved in this, just because it's, and also, I mean, just the stats on dismembering a body requires at least two people as well.
100%. And you're exactly right. And that goes back to that conversation we were having about, you know, people flipping, you right. know, and how is that going to sit with the public? How is that going to sit with the jury in terms of, all right, they decided to hang it on the dude with the dough, but, you know, we've got a crew like an entourage,
right.
you know, that's basically walking on this thing because they all flipped, even though it's pretty clear they all had a hand on it or in this thing.
Right.
And, you know, to me, the biggest problem for the state in this case is going to be the decomposition of the body.
Yeah.
You know, because that ultimately, they're not going to be able to tell that jury exactly how she died.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was strangulation, totally. Blunt force, I mean, poison, they just don't know.
Right.
You know, and they're not going to be able to. So, I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, they have to prove that she died unlawfully, you know, and that he right. caused it, and that, you know, that he had formed the intent to do it before he did it, you know, so that it wasn't a heat of the moment type thing. So
it's definitely, it's going to be digital, man. It's got to be there, I think.
It looks like you said, somebody flipped.
Yeah.
Like,
combination.
You know what I mean? That's like, to me, that's more important than the digital evidence.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because, yes, I mean, we see it every day on social media. People do stupid shit. You see people filming their own crimes all the time. I mean, it's like unbelievable. I'm like, what is that dude doing, man?
Well, the digital gave him who to talk to and gave him the weak links to attack first.
Right.
And so that's where it gave you the leakage of, all right, we need to go for this guy, and this guy that they would otherwise been completely unaware of. You know, anytime you're trying to learn the secrets of any nation, you know, and you're trying to recruit a spy or flip someone, like in some of the work I did, the easiest thing is not to try to recruit the spy. You recruit the guy taking out the trash because they're actually carrying out the shit that everyone actually knows, and everyone
right.
totally, they're oblivious to everyone. You know, right. they're invisible. So you go for the invisible people first.
Always.
To that entourage.
Always. And then, I mean, the reality of that situation, again, that is the easiest flip in the history of flipping, because yep. you're dealing with young guys that are like, your life hangs in the balance right here. Like, whatever you decide to do in this moment in time is going to set your course for the rest of your days. And you have a choice, and your choice is to go down with the ship, and that ship is sinking, or you can help us.
And with an LA homicide detective with 20, 30, sometimes 40 years of reps of these types of interviews going against a 20-year-old who it's their first time, I wonder who's going to come out ahead on the interview strategy.
I'm wondering about this because it feels like the defense of David is already somewhat in a corner by the way that they're verbing things. Basically, it's bad, but it's not that bad. Is kind of what I think they may be facing if they end up in a trial here at some point. Aside from David pleading guilty, which I don't foresee that happening, is there a world here, Bob, where there may be some sort of a plea deal reached? Obviously, there's so many more things that need to happen before we even get there. But just kind of predicting the future as best we can with the blocks that we have in our playground. Is there a world where that could take place here, where maybe he would plead to some lesser charges? Would the DA even offer that? Would they even want that? Or if they're going through already and grandstanding the way that they are, saying, we got all this, would they even want to go that? Or is it, no, we're taking this to court, you're going down. Either you admit to it all or we're taking you all the way down ourselves.
The easy answer to that is, we don't know until the defense attorney sees the evidence.
Yep.
You know, because I mean, that's when you know what they've got.
Sure.
Because at this point, it's all just grandstanding by both sides. States out there saying we've got a slam dunk case and defense saying, well, my guy didn't do it. Good luck proving it. And, you know, once the discovery starts flowing in and you start to see what they have, that's when you start having a serious conversation with your client. You know, I mean, if it looks like they have the ability to be able to prove this case up in a way that is going to convince a jury that he did this beyond a reasonable doubt, then you're having a very real conversation with your client and saying, look, you know, you're in trouble here, you know, and you need to really think about it. Do you want me to go and try to get them to take the death penalty off the table in order to spare your life? Or do you want to go in and fight it? If you know, the state is of the position that they're not going to budge on the death penalty, well, then they're going to go to trial on it, because at that point, your job becomes less about, you know, proving innocence or guilt. It becomes about saving your client's life in terms of the death penalty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're going to put the fight up. So I don't know. I mean, it just depends on what they have on them, you know, It's kind of a fascinating case in that sense, because you really just don't know how they were able to build the case because of the condition of the body. You know what I'm saying? And like, you don't really even know when she died, you know? So it's like, you've got that thing, like, where if they're going to come in and say, well, that happened the night of, well, how the hell do you know? Mm-hmm. Like, how are you going to prove that up? Is your medical examiner going to be able to come in and prove the time of death? And they're not going to be able to. Right. You know, just because they don't know.
Other than, if the digital, we don't, again, pure speculation, we don't know, but they have the date now. They're saying the 23rd or something of when in the house didn't come out. I'm going to guess it must be digital. There must be something digital.
And also the Tesla's data.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to guess there's something there that gives them a much better timeline on what took place by the reactions and the communications of those around her in those moments. That's going to be real fascinating.
And it'll probably all be after the fact shit.
Yeah,
you
true.
Know what I'm saying? Like, not the planning and the execution of the execution, but really the how do we get rid of the body type stuff? Like, where are you at now? What are we going to do? Did you go get all the stuff that happened after it, which really kind of makes for a stronger case for the you know, like the mutilation of human remains, false statements, tampering with evidence type charges. Mm-hmm. Like, even if they're not able to nail him on the homicide itself, which remains a possibility because of the issues of, you know, that we've been talking about, with just the decomposition of the body and you know, the ability to kind of pinpoint a time in which it happened, are going to be serious hurdles that the state's going to have to overcome. But at the end of the day, he's not walking on all of it. It's kind of like that before the Robert Durst, you know, they started nailing him and he had that case down in wherever it was, in Texas, and they couldn't get him on the homicide. And he basically was like, yeah, you know, I was around the body, but they got him on the mutilation of human remains, you know what I mean? And that was the only thing that they could convict him on, because it was very similar circumstances. In that case, the condition of the body was just so deteriorated that they couldn't make heads or tails of when the person died, how they died, none of it, you know? And ultimately at the end of the day, that causation aspect in terms of the homicide charge is something that they have to prove up.
Interestingly, I just looked it up as we were talking about it. Teslas do record the opening and closing of the frunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think they record if you touch the damn thing.
If you breathe. Yeah. How many breaths you took.
Current sperm count.
Another lesson of killers. If you're going to murder someone, don't put it in a super vehicle that's going to record everything you do.
Yeah. Don't pick the vehicles of the future. That's not a good choice. Go with a Pinto or something like that. You know, go with the Geo Metro. Those work.
Acer.
Acer. Acer. Gremlin.
Yeah. Your
all
thoughts.
AMC, in, all AMC vehicles.
Showing our age right there.
Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and do press subscribe wherever you're getting podcasts.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
By law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.